Right now, our next guest says childhood has changed in the era of organized playdates and constant adult supervision.
He writes that by the time he was 9, he would ride his bike a mile over to another kid's house in the neighborhood, but couldn't see himself necessarily allowing his own son to do the same.
Clint Edwards joins us now. His article on the topic appeared in the Washington Post this week. He writes online at No Idea What I'm Doing, a daddy blog, and he's the author of the book, This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things, Parenting Marriage Madness. Clint, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, Clint, tell us a little bit about how this piece came about for you.
Well, we found an old VHS tape of The Goonies at a yard sale, and I happen to still have a VCR. And so we watched it with my kids, and my 9-year-old was trying to figure out why these kids were allowed to go so far without their parents. And he just couldn't wrap his head around it. And I realized how much different his life is now than what it was when I was a kid. We more or less kind of schedule everything and where he goes, and there aren't as many children just wandering around the neighborhood as there was when I was growing up.
Yeah, compare and contrast a little more. Your childhood, and it sounds kind of like mine, to your kid's childhood, and it sounds kind of like my kid's childhood, too. It's not just you.
Sure, sure. Well, and that was kind of the fear when I wrote it, that maybe, you know, maybe it's just us, but it seems to have really struck a chord. Because, when I was a kid, once we got our bikes, our parents were like, okay, get out of here, and come back when the streetlights come on. And that was just kind of our curfew, and that's definitely not the case now. We have kids that, within sight of our house that will come and play basketball in our yard or stuff like that, but we don't even have a whole lot of that. But, it's not like when I was a kid where you just go knock on doors until you found a kid to play with, and then you go down to the river and skip rocks.
Well, what do you think has changed since then?
People keep asking me that. And I think, personally, I think it's fear. There's a fear to keep your children safe, and it's a valid fear. And I think that, they're your kids, you got to keep them safe. And so there's this fear that there's predators out everywhere or that there's danger without you watching them. And it's gotten to the point now where kids kind of get shuttled around and they're kept in the home and they're not allowed to have that unsupervised play where they kind of get into trouble and find a way to get out of it or get into a sticky spot and get out of it on their own. And I think there's a lot of life skills to be learned there.
Yeah, what do you think kids learn from all that unstructured time that we might not be getting now for kids?
Well, I know what I learned from it. I learned how to... I learned how to skip a rock, with friends. I learned how to engage in social interactions without my parents getting involved. I learned how to fall down, and I learned how to get back up without someone helping me. And those are pretty valuable skills.
So you write about this, but does this start to change your parenting, Clint? Are you trying to make an effort to, push your kid out the door and say, come back when it gets dark?
Gosh, I'm afraid to do it. And not only I'm still kind of clinging to this fear that, of my children's safety and what might be out there for them, but there's also, it seems like our whole neighborhood has signed on to this kind of social contract that your kids kind of stay within sight of the house and you don't go too far. And if I let my son go too far, I don't know if there would be very many kids for him to find, or other parents would probably start to look at me differently, or, there's always that fear that you got child services knocking on your door as your kids wander in the neighborhood just looking for friends.
Do you think parents could try to have a different social contract with like-minded parents in the neighborhood and say, I'm going to let my kid, have a little bit longer leash? Would you do the same and see where it might go?
Well, yeah, sure. I'm sure we could. I have yet to set that up. But, maybe at some point I could see other parents, other neighborhoods doing that. And if you look at some of the comments on the post, some of the positive ones, some parents are setting that up. They know that so-and-so down the street is a good place for them to go, and they'll let their kid go, half a mile down the road and go play with so-and-so on their bikes. But it's still much more controlled and regulated than it ever was when I was a child.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Cindy is on the line in the Fox Cities. Cindy, hi.
Hello. Well, you were talking about what you learned as a child, and as a child we had 140 acres to roam with a farm, and I learned a great deal of ingenuity because I feel sort of like, you know, the monkey trying to learn how to use tools with sticks and that because, you know, you just learned ingenuity.
Cindy, thanks a lot for that call. Yeah, I think about Calvin and Hobbes, a favorite comic of mine and of my kids. And I wonder if they liked it so much because it was so different than the world they're growing up in. A kid out figuring out the world on their own, Clint.
Well, and I think I, you know, when I said I was bored, my parents would say, go outside. And you would stay bored for a minute, but then you find your way, and you did create a lot of ingenuity, and a lot of the stuff, you know, my brother and I, we figure out ways to, create stuff out of sticks, for heaven's sakes. And now my kids aren't, I mean, I don't see them making anything out of sticks. I see them making a lot of stuff in Minecraft. But I don't know, and I don't know what the long term effects of this all. It's interesting to talk about.
We're talking to Clint Edwards about unsupervised time for kids. He says a childhood has changed a lot over the years. In his experience, I think a lot of people's experience, kids don't have that kind of unsupervised time that they used to have.
And you could join the conversation and tell us if you feel like childhood has changed. Is this the version of childhood that you see for your children right now? Was it the one that you knew growing up? And what do you think is lost when there is parental supervision 99% of the time, and kids don't have the time to run out and wander the woods and have adventures on their own? Do you think it's safety first and that's okay, or do you think there's something missing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
We're picking up our conversation with parenting writer and blogger Clint Edwards about giving kids unsupervised time in an age of scheduled play dates. And we want to know what you think.
Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Do you think kids should be allowed to have more free roaming, no adults around time? Do you worry more about safety than you think your parents did? Tell us why. You can call us at 800-642-1234.
We'll go to our callers now with Debbie on the line in Madison. Debbie, hi.
Hi. I wanted to say I grew up in the baby boom, and we would go outside in the morning. Mom would say, go out, and that was that. Then we ruled the streets. There were kids everywhere, and, we policed each other, and mothers were always home, and I think that's a different. There's no one, no adults necessarily at home now, and you know, we could always go to somebody's house and stay unhurt. So, and that's the difference. Because I look at this a lot, and it saddens me that kids can't do that. And the other thing we used to do is we'd get our own moral compass, because, you know, you'd be down at the creek and somebody'd be getting in trouble and doing the wrong thing, or you may want to join in, or, or you'd say, no, I'm not going to. So she learn to say no.
Debbie, thanks a lot for the call. Let's start with that second point first, Clint. It's a way for kids to sort of build their own moral compass. If a parent is around guiding the behavior all the time, well, maybe they're not learning much.
Well, and I think this, this comes down to that idea of when I said that I fell down and learned how to pick myself up. You know, you're going to be exposed to things that, I mean, kids act differently when they're by themselves than when they're around their parents. I mean, I know I did. I assume that my kids do, too. And you're going to learn a lot about how to treat people, how to work with other people. And there's also a lot to be said about, you know, if you're hanging out with good peers, that they'll have a good influence on you, and to be able to kind of organically grow that, just from child-to-child interaction.
And Clint, what about that other point that Debbie made, that there used to be a lot of homes where there was one parent home? I guess in that time it was probably the mom, and so there were lots of eyes on the street. So yeah, the kids were out there by themselves, but there were lots of people home if there was help that needed to be called for or something like that. And these days, you know, to bring the economy with it, you know, a lot of parents have to work both, maybe more than one job each, maybe two jobs, and both at the same time. So how does that affect things?
I'm sure it has some impact on it. I know, and I mentioned this in the article, that after my father left, my mother was working, you know, two jobs, and I and my curfew wasn't the streetlights anymore. It was kind of like when she got home from her second job, and I ended up being raised a lot by other people's parents. showing up at other people's houses. I ate a lot of meals at other people's homes. And that tended to really kind of fill a need that just wasn't there because of my home situation. And I think that there's a lot to be said about that, too. You know, kids being able to go over and there being a parent home. But there's so many different kinds of parents' homes. You know, two parents working, but there's also a lot of, you know, stay-at-home dads. I was a stay-at-home dad for a little while, which was very, very eye-opening for me as a parent. And so I think that there's still parents at home. I think parents are just afraid to let their children wander into other parents' homes without it being scheduled and it not being people that they really, really know.
Thanks for the call, Debbie. We'll go next to Jenna in Eau Claire. Jenna, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to put in my two cents. I'm a 24-year-old student in Eau Claire, but grew up in the suburbs of Green Bay. And I had the same curfew, street lights, as soon as they came on. I kind of just wanted to give a suggestion for parents who want to keep their kids safe, but at the same time want to, you know, let them explore and figure things out for themselves. My parents started with us really young, just taking us around our neighborhood on family walks. And then as I got older, they started letting me branch out just around one block within my house radius to my friend's house. And then third grade, I was bike riding around, you know, the neighborhood by that time. And when I arrived at my friend's house or where my destination, always had to give my mom a call, whether it was through the house phone or nowadays a text or a tweet even. But that way she was always able to keep an eye on where I was going or I checked back in at a certain time. And, it branched out from there. But I feel like I learned the value of keeping myself safe because I wanted to make it home for dinner and see my parents at the end of the night. So,
Jenna, thanks a lot for the call. And Clint, basically expanding the bubble gradually, which is a lot of how we did it in our family, too. That is probably helpful for the kids, probably even more helpful to reassure the parents as they slowly expand that independent range.
Well, and I know a lot of, now this is kind of, we're talking older, you know, more teenage kids. Well, I mean, I don't know exactly when kids start to get cell phones. I haven't given one to my kids yet. But once they do, I know there are a lot of apps that do make parents feel a lot better about it, like as far as like Find My Friends and stuff like that, that I know other parents use that they'll say, hey, as long as you've got this app on and I kind of know where you are, you're fine to go travel around. And I think that maybe that's the direction that we're headed now as parents, is that we, you know, we kind of keep this kind of technical eye on them as they wander.
And a quick comment here from Melinda. She says, we'd love to tell our kids to walk to the park and play with the other kids, but sadly there are no other kids out playing. We try to let them play as we did, but we are a minority among parents. Far too often, one parent texts another for a playdate at least a week in advance. And Clint, just briefly as we wrap up, is that the way things stand right now, do you think, for most parents and kids?
That's the way it is around our neighborhood. In fact, we had one kid who just moved. And nice kid, and he wandered around the neighborhood just kind of like I did, and a lot of people really worried about him. They worried about what he was getting into, they worried if he was a bad influence, and they kind of worried about his home situation. And there was a lot of discussion about that, and at the time I kind of bought into it, and then the more I started thinking about it, you know, he's just doing what I did as a kid, and everything was fine. So it is, like I keep saying, there's definitely a social structure here that started to develop, and where it started and how it's created itself, I don't know.
Clint, thank you so much for joining us. It was Clint Edwards, the author of No Idea What I'm Doing, a Daddy Blog. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A new museum exhibit in Appleton is trying to shine a light on a persistent problem in that area, one that doesn't always get a lot of attention. It's called Invisible, Homelessness in Appleton, and it features over 150 photographs taken by people in the area who are homeless or are living on the edge of homelessness.
The photos aim to give a voice to those who can be overlooked by society and paint a picture of what homelessness actually looks like in the area. In addition, the groups behind the exhibit hope it's going to spark a broader discussion about the issue as well as bring about action from the community.
We have two guests with us now to talk about the exhibit. Nick Hoffman is chief curator of the History Museum at the Castle, where the exhibit is up and running. Nick, hello.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Also, Jennifer Dieter is with us. She's community relations director for Homeless Connections, a group committed to helping the homeless and those at risk of homelessness in the Fox Valley community. She collaborated on this new exhibit. Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, I think a lot of people might think of homelessness as a big city only problem, but you point out in the exhibit that that's not the case. So, Jennifer, let's start with you. How prevalent is homelessness in the Fox Cities?
Well, the statistic we often give is about 350 people are homeless on any given night in the Fox Cities. However, a recent research project that we did called Project Rush, the research to understand and solve homelessness, shows that the issue is much broader. We're now seeing many people who are on the verge of homelessness or who are doubled up for economic reasons. So while 350 is the number on paper, that issue is becoming more and more large here in the Fox Cities.
And Nick, in this exhibit, you wanted people experiencing homelessness in the Fox Cities to be able to actually tell their own stories through these photos. How did you make that happen?
Well, about in November, we started a photojournalism project where people who were experiencing homelessness or living on the edge of homelessness were given disposable cameras and journals to tell any sort of story they wanted to related to their experiences. So that's the main narrative of the exhibit, is people in their own words explaining their conditions in Appleton.
And what kind of things did they come back with?
Well, it's really fascinating. There's a lot of patterns that come forward, things talking about policing, places where you can go for help. A lot of people just added some humor, talking about interesting things they experience and see every day on the streets of Appleton. So it's just a really fascinating story. It's filled with humor. There's some sadness, but it really gives us an idea of what people see and do in Appleton who are struggling with housing.
Jennifer, were the photographers, people who are homeless or at risk of homelessness, reluctant to share their experiences at first, or did they really embrace this opportunity?
We had about 50 cameras out with people who are experiencing homelessness, and 18 cameras came back that we were able to use for the exhibit. I think some people were hesitant to take that step, but I think a lot of people liked to have the opportunity to share their story and to really show what homelessness is like through their eyes, and they look at it as a way to add humanity to the issue. And so we tried to share that it was their opportunity to really show what homelessness is like in our community through their eyes versus just a number or statistic.
Yeah, and Jennifer, I wanted to ask about that. I think when any of us hear the word homeless or hear about homelessness, I think an image pops up of who that is, what the life is like. Do you see a diversity of experience, a range of personality and what the meaning of homelessness is for the different people who participated?
We really do. We always say that homelessness can really touch anyone, that nobody is immune from homelessness. So it affects the elderly, it affects newborn babies, and anyone and everyone in between. And so I think oftentimes people don't think of families being homeless in our community, when in actuality at Homeless Connections we served about 98 families last year. And so I think this exhibit points to the different experiences and the different views of what homelessness looks like and how people tackle that issue in different ways.
Nick, this exhibit, of course, has the pictures, but they're also captioned. Where do the captions and descriptions come from?
It comes from their own words, those photo journals. And so it really richly tells the stories that are behind every image that's in the exhibit. And we've printed them off, their photo journals, in these long narratives. So you can follow their journey through the city as they went around with their cameras.
And I saw one, there's just a couple posted on the website of a park with some benches, and there was a caption something like, this is where I go to kind of catch up when it all just, it's too much, when it all overtakes me, something like that. I don't have the exact words. Do you see a lot of really just personal details about what this place, what this image means to the person who took the picture?
Yeah, every single image really just has a powerful story. And I think, as Jennifer said, the great part about this exhibit is that the camera is turned on the community instead of the people who are experiencing homelessness. So for people who live in our area, this is the Fox Cities through a whole different lens. And it's a really important exhibit for people to see and experience and learn about homelessness in our area.
Jennifer, yeah, seeing these pictures that came back from homeless people, did it give you new insights to the way they experience the Fox Cities and maybe the ways that your organization can work with them and work with the community?
It definitely did. I know when we were looking at some of the captions, we had some debates about whether or not to include the information because some of it could be sense could be controversial or could maybe impact how people view homelessness. And so we decided to leave it all out there for conversation, and I think it's going to lead to more conversations on how to tackle this issue and how to really help people who are struggling with homelessness.
Does this point toward needs for homeless people that might not be obvious to the community at large, Jennifer?
The needs?
Yeah.
I think there's definitely a broader conversation that needs to happen. It's a multifaceted issue. You'll see people who are struggling with mental health, with physical health issues, who can't afford health care. You're going to see people who aren't able to find affordable housing. You're going to find people who are struggling with substance abuse, who have had traumatic experiences in their lives. So you see an entire spectrum of things that have led to homelessness, and many people are facing these barriers at the same time. And so it's a very complex issue. And I think as a community, we really need to tackle many needs at once. We can't just look at one root cause of homelessness.
Nick, can you walk us through the exhibit a little? We go and we visit the History Museum at the castle. We go to the exhibit area. What do we see?
Well, the whole exhibit is actually divided into this broad spectrum of housing, from individuals first who you'll encounter who are in many ways living on the streets or at some of our things like the warming shelter in Appleton. And it goes through the entire spectrum and ends with individuals who actually found stable housing while they were participating in this project. And each exhibit panel that actually has the narrative on it, it releases some of the data from studies that have been done in our area, also is partnered with data that we tried to scrounge up from the past. So I think a lot of people in Appleton think that homelessness is a new issue, but as this exhibit illustrates with its history, that it goes all the way back to the origins of the city. So I hope people who are walking away will see this as a continual issue that we have to work on in our city.
Jennifer, this is titled, this exhibit is Invisible Homelessness in Appleton. Is that part of the goal to make it more visible?
That's correct. That was our entire goal of the exhibit. We conducted this research. We have this data, but the community still really doesn't have an understanding of homelessness and those individual stories. And so this idea is to bring homelessness out of the shadows and into the light. Oftentimes we're told that homelessness doesn't exist in our community because people can't see it. And so we want people to be able to see that homelessness does exist and it's not just a big city issue.
Now, Nick, I know at the museum you probably can't follow patrons around and look over their shoulder and listen too closely, but have you gotten a sense of the kind of response people are having as they see this exhibit?
Yeah, the last thing that people encounter in the exhibit is a question about how do we solve homelessness in our area. So we get visitor feedback through that. They get to share their ideas and contribute to this broader story, too. And already we have about 30 to 40 responses since the exhibit opened a few weeks ago. It's really a fascinating debate to see people contribute their thoughts to the issue.
And Jennifer, a lot of times when an artist focuses in on a part of their world, it changes how they see it. Do you see anything like that from the homeless people or people near homelessness who took these pictures? Are they seeing their own community in a different way now?
I think they are. I think that it was an opportunity for them to really think about the things that mattered to them and to put that narrative together. And I feel like the people that participated took great pride in the work that they did and feel proud that their story is in a museum for 2 years. And so I think that it gave them a voice when they otherwise wouldn't have a voice, and also gave them a new perspective on their own situation and let them sit down and really reflect on that.
Nick, I understand the exhibit's going to be on display at the museum for the next 2 years at least, but it's also going to have a traveling component. What happens in that?
Yeah, it's a smaller version of the exhibit, but still has a lot of the same historical and contemporary data. And a lot of the photo journals that are in the main exhibit. But this is a way for us to reach out into the community and hopefully catch people off guard. The exhibit will appear at the library, the Appleton Public Library, other communities in our area. It'll go to public schools and private schools. And what we want to do is have people who maybe don't normally go to the museum or even unaware of homelessness in our area encounter this in very unexpected places and hopefully encourage them to read more about it and engage the materials.
Jennifer, this exhibit has only been up for a little while now, but are you hearing from people in the community, maybe community leaders, elected officials, are you hearing response from them saying, oh, I guess we do need to take this seriously?
Yes, there's been a lot of buzz around this exhibit. I know a lot of people have shown interest in it, and our government has always been fairly supportive of this issue and wanting to tackle it. And so I think this gives them another opportunity to share it with the wider community so that we can engage more people in this issue.
And briefly, as we wrap up, Jennifer, what would you say is the one priority for the community to tackle to help help homeless people in the area?
I think affordable housing is a very important factor in our community. The housing stock just isn't enough for the people who have low income to afford housing here in the Fox Cities.
Jennifer, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Nick, thanks to you.
Thanks.
We've been talking to Nick Hoffman, chief curator of the History Museum at the Castle in Appleton, and Jennifer Dieter is the Community Relations Director for Homeless Connections. They join us to talk about a new photography exhibit that tells the story of homelessness in the Fox Cities.